The rules tonight are these. The candidates will have 2 minutes to answer a question taken from our panel. His opponent will then have 1 minute to respond to what his rival has had to say, and then we'll go on to the next question. A coin toss has given Mr. Flynn the first question, and it comes from Enola Gay Matthews.
Good evening. This question on the subject of business or economics, and Mr. Flynn. The state legislature last year made massive cuts in education spending and health care spending. Texas ranks very low in the 50 states in education spending and public health and human services spending. Therefore, public schools and the Medicaid program are among those struggling. These problems affect the district's constituents of all ages. In your opinion, what can be done to improve the situation?
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. The Texas legislature in the last session went into session with a $27 billion shortfall. And it doesn't take a lot of mathematical ability to understand that there were going to have to be some cuts. We started out in 2003 when we had a $10 billion. Then we watched the economy continue to create a downward cycle. But in spite of that, Texas continues to be the number one place to live, work, and raise a family. And I've always said that I don't think that we have a big revenue problem in Texas. I think $172 billion budget is an adequate budget that we can have. We do have a spending problem. And as we went through the session, I rarely have, in fact, I've never had anyone walk in my office and say, you know, Dan, I'm not being taxed enough. Would you please raise our taxes? That doesn't happen. So you have to make some tough, hard decisions. And I believe that we have done that over the years. If you look at see what's happening, we have a little over 1,200 people a day that have moved into Texas. And Texas is the envy of other places in the United States. And I think it's because we've had good, strong, conservative leadership. I think we have met the needs. We haven't been able to fulfill all the wants. But I think that Texas still remains that place that people want to live and come and do business.
Mr. Alexander, you have 1 minute to respond to that question.
I appreciate that very much. Well, I will say this. I completely agree with one thing that Mr. Flynn says, and that is that we have a spending problem. And the fact of the matter is he's part of that spending problem. During the 10 years that he's been in office, our state spending has increased 52%, $60 billion, while at the same time our population has increased only 20%. So Mr. Flynn is part of the spending problem that we have down in Austin. With regards to this, I guess the second part of Enola's question with regards to what can we do about schools, you know, one of the real problems we have in our and we've got to recognize with our school systems is that the state of Texas is in the bottom half of how much we spend on students and how much we spend on schools. And it's not, in my opinion, a matter of spending more out of our budget. It's a matter of equitably distributing the income to the individual schools. And the schools in this school district, the rural schools, are the ones that have suffered over the last 10 years under Mr. Flynn's tenure.
Okay, Mr. Alexander, that's your 1 minute. Scott Harvey has the next question for Mr. Alexander.
Thank you. Last week, both the UT and Texas A&M University systems approved tuition hikes at several of their member schools, including a $10 per semester credit hour bump here at A&M Commerce. There are also area community colleges increasing tuition, and what administrators say is partly because of a decrease in state funding. Your reaction to these changes, and what will be your philosophy toward university college funding when the legislature meets next year?
Well, this is mine, right?
It's yours.
Sorry. The legislature in the last couple of years let me start over. For 100 years, the college tuition, the amount that you were charged, the school could charge you, was set by the legislature. It's been recently turned over, and now individual schools determine what their tuition is going to be. It has resulted in a huge hike in cost of tuition. I have some problems with that because we're turning the cost of the college tuition over to unelected officials. And I think that we've got to relook at that, and we've got to come up with better solutions. We've got to have an equitable way of distributing, of managing our costs as far as college education and tuition goes. And leaving it in the control of unelected officials in each individual college, I don't believe is necessarily the right answer. It is unfortunate that the cost of college has just skyrocketed, and that is going to affect our future because our kids and college education are our future.
Mr. Flynn, your rebuttal.
Thank you. Of course, there's no question that the cost of education has gone up just like the cost of everything. And one of the issues that we tried to address was to bring it back to a local level where universities could be involved in that. One of the things that we have done is certainly try to strengthen our junior colleges, and we've done it right here in this district, and Parrish Junior College is certainly one of the prime examples of how we can have affordable education. You know, it's not a right that everyone gets to go to college, and as a matter of fact, one of the things that is disturbing is that 50% of our kids that graduate from high school never go to college. So we have to find out other ways for them to be able to become useful citizens in the community and work toward that end. And I believe as we go through working on this, the governor has got a plan, one that I would be very happy to work with him on, and that is to bring down college tuition.
Thank you very much. Kerry Craig, your question for Mr. Flynn.
Well, we're talking about education. We see increasing emphasis on education, the high schools pushing students to prepare for higher education. There are many state-mandated testing programs, the TAX program we're all familiar with, also the STARS program that will be starting this year. Many college-bound students are better prepared for the college, but funding has been cut in many areas away from vocational programs. There are some students in high school that, for whatever reason, college is not in their future. Do you see any reason or any way that you could support or even introduce legislation that would support technical or vocational training in our high schools?
Absolutely, and I advocate that quite often because, as I just said, 50% of our kids that graduate from high school don't go to college, so we need to have those vocations. As a bank president for a number of years, I've always laughingly said, you know, some of the very best customers I had in my bank were the people that had the convenience stores or had the machine shops or plumbers, electricians. All my doctors and lawyers, I seemed to have to deal with their overdrafts. And so it was always good to see it. I passed the only legislation in the history of the Texas House to end that oppressive testing that's been forced on everyone. Teachers, parents, and students feel like that the standardized testing has been something that has been totally overrated, and we passed that in the Texas House 140-2. I was very proud of that, and I think that the way the bill was written, those dollars, almost $500 million, would have stayed with the local school district, and the superintendents would have been able to allocate those towards exactly the programs that you're talking about and maintaining those teachers.
Mr. Alexander, your response to that.
I respectfully disagree that Mr. Flynn has supported and advocated for our rural school districts in whatsoever in this representative district. He has supported the bill in 2006 that created the targeted revenue system that our rural schools currently are under and are underfunded per student in these rural school districts. He has been begged year after year to do something about it by the superintendents, the parents, the teachers, and the principals, and he will do nothing about it. He will not pay attention to their desires, their wishes, and work with them for a common sense solution to an equitable way of funding our rural schools.
Nick Bailey, your question for Mr. Flynn.
Mr. Flynn, currently our state has many citizens who lack access to health care services either because they cannot afford insurance, are underinsured, or face social or cultural barriers. What steps would you take to correct this imbalance?
There's no question that the health care has become the big item. It probably this next session will end up surpassing even public education. So much of that is federal mandates that we can't do anything on the state level. What we can do is try to use the dollars that we have to be able to provide the care that we can. And I think that there's a lot of folks that are going to medical emergency facilities that if we can channel them into health care, which is one of the things that we've done, because if you can prevent some of the problems, you can reduce the expense of it. And I think that the national health care program will cost Texas another $24 billion over the next 3 sections. And so it's one that's going to be needing to address, and we will continue to do that. And I think we've opened up this last session a lot of new women's health care clinics that will be able to get funding for health care needs as opposed to just specific issues.
Mr. Alexander, your response?
I don't know that I have any different opinion on that issue.
Okay. We're going to open things up a little bit. Ms. Matthews, you may ask either candidate any question.
This may parallel a little bit some of the information already given by our candidates this evening, but for Mr. Flynn, recently Governor Perry asked legislators to support his proposed Texas Budget Compact, which calls on the legislature to continue to address state budget with cuts only approach, not touching the rainy day fund and not looking for additional revenue. Where would you stand on the governor's request?
I would be supportive of the governor's request. I served 4 years on the Sunset Commission, and while I served on that Sunset Commission, I feel it's one of the best things we do in Texas. I wish the federal government had one. I know during my tenure, as we reviewed each state agency, we found out that in many cases there was no longer a need for that particular agency, and in some cases they weren't even addressing the problems that they were originally created to do. As said earlier and previously, that I don't think that we have a revenue problem in Texas as much as we do a spending problem. And I think that those are the areas that need to be addressed. The Economic Stabilization Fund that you refer to as a rainy day fund is probably one of the premier items that has made Texas out in the forefront of the nation. Not only has it helped us with our bond ratings, Texas bond rating is even higher than the federal government. And I think one of the reasons that, having been a banker as long as I have, I like to see that we don't spend all that we have and that we do have something, because we use that for hurricanes, natural disasters, and we certainly, this last summer, I'm sure everybody in this room experienced some fear of the drought when you saw the fires, and we were able to use some of that funding to do it. And we'll continue to look at those issues. That's what the governor's mandate has been. I say a mandate. That's what his request has been. He said, let's go through there and look at all of these agencies and see if there really is a continued need for them and if they are performing the what they were supposed, what they were created for.
Mr. Alexander?
I'm supportive, but I believe we've got to review in each session what our budget's going to be, what our expenses are going to be, and we've got to do that. I don't want to spend the rainy day fund unless it's our last resort. But this continued political talk about don't have a revenue problem but have a spending problem, it's a complete failure to recognize that in the last 10 years that Mr. Flynn's been in office, he has, in his tenure, the state spending has increased 52%. That's why you're having problems now looking into whether we're going to be able to or have to go into the rainy day fund. The spending is out of control in Austin, and Mr. Flynn is part of the problem.
Scott Harvey, do you have a question for Mr. Alexander?
You mentioned a rainy day fund. In your opinion, what qualifies for the use of rainy day funds, and did the 82nd Texas Legislature use it the way you would have, and what are ways you may want to allocate rainy day funds in 2013?
Me?
Yes.
Well, again, it's last resort, for natural disasters, emergencies of the state, and that sort. I'm not for dipping into it for the education fund unless it's a last resort. an emergency. I do think that our education is one of the most important issues for our state. It is the future of our state, and I think we need to look into what we could possibly use it for, but at the very least, the funds is designed to be used for extreme emergencies, the natural disasters, et cetera. That's what I understand.
Mr. Flynn, your response?
Would you read that? I want to be sure I answer your question correctly.
Yeah, what qualifies for the use of rainy day funds, in your opinion? And did the 82nd Texas Legislature use it the way you would have used it? Do you agree with the way it was used? And what ways would you allocate 2013?
Which would allocate what?
What ways would you allocate some of the rainy day funds if you would allocate any at all in 2013?
I voted to use a little over $3 billion of the rainy day fund. It was to clean up some of the outstanding bills that the state of Texas had. I thought that was something that needed to be done, and we did it. As far as what is the rainy day fund, it's for economic stabilization, and that's exactly what we do. We do it for natural or man-made disasters, and I think that here again, it's one of those things where you don't spend all you have. If you do, you'll wake up and you'll find yourself in a problem, just like other states around the nation. California would love to have an economic stabilization fund. Our rainy day fund is larger than most states' budget. As far as how we allocated it, I thought that it was a prudent way to do it. We handled it. It continued to keep Texas' budget in a balance. By the way, our budget did decrease by $16 billion in the last session. And I think that we saw the nation and the financial markets recognize that we had done the correct thing.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Craig, you may direct your question toward either candidate.
Mr. Flynn, let's bring this down to a local level or more so. In rural counties like Hunt and Hopkins County, almost everybody knows everybody else. In these counties, in a primary election, voters must choose either a Democratic or Republican primary in which to cast their ballot, but they're not able to vote for the candidates of their choice if they've got a favorite candidate running as a Democrat in one race. In a separate race, they have a favorite candidate that's running as a Republican. In the legislature, would you consider supporting legislation that would remove partisan politics out of county elections?
Out of county elections?
Yes, sir.
I think it'd be something to consider, but let me tell you, Kerry, I spent a lot of my life building the Republican Party of Texas, and we built it based upon conservative values, and I think that that is a great distinction for people to know who the candidates are, what they stand for, and as far as on the local level, we already do it in school boards, and we do it in cities. To raise it up to a county, I would say that that would be something that the counties could consider. I've never had anyone come to our office and say, you know, we want to do away with the partisan elections on county level. But I do think that you need to have a distinction of what people stand for. I've worked very hard in building the Republican platform. It's a conservative document that I'm very proud of, and it's one that I support 100%.
Mr. Alexander, your response?
How about asking them what they stand for? I agree. I mean, as an attorney, I've worked for 20 years in Hunt County and surrounding counties, in and out of that courthouse down in Hunt County, in Greenville, rather, day in, day out. 20 years ago, when I first started practicing law, there were all Democrats, whether it's clerk, commissioner, county judge, you name it. Today, it's completely swinging the opposite direction. Several years ago, it was always half and half. It didn't make any difference to me whether they're a Democrat or Republican. If they were qualified to do the job, I knew they were qualified to do the job. I knew that they could handle their employees. I knew they had the respect of their employees and their peers. That's what qualifies someone to be a district clerk, county clerk. It doesn't make any difference whether they're a Republican or Democrat. In my opinion, that you shouldn't have that label. If you have a question about their loyalty, whether they're conservative or not, you ask them.
Thank you, Mr. Alexander. Nick Bailey, a question for Mr. Alexander.
Yes, say, with undocumented immigrants entering the country, and I guess more specifically Texas, you know, and having U.S.-born children, how do you feel about the policy that grants citizenship to these individuals and their children, and would you change it?
Granting illegal immigrants citizenship?
Yes. Like, that's your question? I guess anchor babies to us.
I'm sorry, what?
I guess anchor babies to simplify it.
Anchor babies.
Yeah,
babies that are born here in the United States to illegal aliens.
Yes.
Illegal immigrants.
Yes.
Do I support that? Okay.
Yes. And if not, how would you change that?
I don't have a problem with that because it goes back for 200 years. That's been the federal policy. If you're born in the United States, you're an American citizen. And I don't have a problem with that. You know, the real problem we have with our immigration issues in this state and in North Texas in particular is that the illegal immigrants, you know, we need to stop encouraging them to come here. It's not about anchor babies. It's about encouraging them to come across the border by giving them incentives to be here. I mean, they are a drain on our hospital because they can go to the hospital and get free health care. They're a drain on our schools because they get free lunches and free breakfasts and free education. We all pay for that. It affects our pocketbook. We've got to do something to stem the flow of illegal immigrants to the United States to begin with. We can't do it by ourselves in this state. We've got to have federal government to help us. We've got to demand they put boots on the ground and provide us with the necessary resources to do that. It's never going to stop completely, but we've done nothing but encourage it seems to me, in the last 10 years with providing them with incentives. Another example that our legislature's done in the last 10 years is they have provided them, illegal immigrants to go to have state tuition prices. In other words, same price that you and I would have, our children would have, to go to the University of Texas or to A&M, an illegal immigrant also has. That, to me, is an incentive to them, an encouragement to them, and that's not fair because it's our tax dollars.
Mr. Flynn, your quick response.
The issue that you bring up of anchor babies, of course, was not 200 years ago. It was right at the end of the Civil War to grant African Americans that citizenship. It has nothing to do with the fact that someone coming into the country illegally should be able to have a child and they become a citizen. That was a ruling by an activist federal judge. I have been a co-author every session I have been in the legislature to petition the federal government with resolution that we amend that. As far as the tuition for illegals that are being provided, it was passed in the late night of 2001 session, one that I was not attending, and it concerned me so greatly that every session that I have served in, I have authored a bill that says that we should do away with that exemption, because it's just not fair for a young person that lives in Oklahoma to have to pay more than someone who came in the country illegally.
Mr. Alexander, do you have a quick response to that?
I don't.
Okay. Ms. Matthews, a question for either candidate.
I would ask Mr. Alexander, and education being a vital part of budget structure, as you've indicated this evening in your opinion, as parents of students who want a college education, where can we parents look for help? We've been being faced with the increased cost to either enroll our kids in school or keep them in there. What do you envision as an affordable way for future Texans, our children or our grandchildren, to be able to afford a college education?
Well, we need to work to reduce the college tuition, first of all, and make it affordable like it was, in my opinion, or much more, much, much more affordable when I went to college back in the 80s. Back when I went to college, you had the opportunity, $15-16 an hour, I think it was, or something, maybe even less than that, at University of Texas. We've got to get our college tuition back down to where it's affordable for the average person that wants to go to school. We've got to encourage private enterprise to back the kids that want to go to school with offering job training programs or whatever while they're in school. We've got to work on those issues because the government I don't know what, from a state legislation, Congress standpoint, we can do other than lower the tuition and cost of going to school.
Mr. Flynn, a one-minute rebuttal.
I believe your question had to do with public education, not higher education.
Higher education.
Then I think that the plan that we are working on right now that the governor has introduced is going to be one that can be very beneficial, where there would be a reduction in what the tuition would be. I would be very supportive of that. Of course, you look back, three and a half years ago, the price of gasoline was $1.69 a gallon. Now it's well over $3. So I think a lot of it has to do with policies that we're having to deal with, not only from a federal level, but the fact that there is an increase in price in everything. But what I want to do is I want to be sure that every child, every student that wants an education can be provided, but I also think that we need to open up areas so that they can go into the other fields that might be of benefit to them and certainly help Texas.
Scott Harvey, a question for either candidate.
Mr. Flynn, what's your assessment of how transportation needs and funding is being addressed in District 2, and how would you either continue or improve those efforts?
When I served on the Sunset Commission and the TxDOT came before that agency, we had a great program. It was one of those typical legislative deals that started out with a bill of 52 pages. It got to the House floor, it went to 355 pages, and it then went to the Senate and went to 700 pages. I then voted against it because I didn't think that it really addressed the immediate needs. It goes right back to what I've said several times this evening, is we don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem. And in the allocation, there are diversions that come out of the highway fund that need to be addressed. And those are the things that I'd like to see. All you have to do is look at what's happened in the last year. There's been a complete revamping of TxDOT, and I think you're going to start seeing a lot of those dollars be allocated out betterly. One of the things that's good, we have local people that are now serving on these boards that will help direct those funds on a local level.
Mr. Alexander, a response to the transportation question?
Yes. Our transportation problem is going to get more and more serious. Over the last 10 years, the state has accrued a debt of $11.9 billion on new road construction. We don't have the money to do that. We accrued a debt. We owe that money. The state of Texas owes that money. Before 10 years ago, we spent whatever money we had in the construction fund, gas taxes, etc. We spent that, and that was it. Now, we constantly need new roads, and I'm going to support new roads in our district, but we've got to realize that this legislation in the last 10 years has increased this debt to $11.9 billion. It'll take, if you pay it off, according to TxDOT, the latest figures, we will spend $1.72 billion on debt payments over the next 2 years to $128 billion on new roads. That means we're spending more paying off the debt than we are building the roads, according to TxDOT figures. We've got to get this under control, and I don't have the magic bullet solution, but I know that Mr. Flynn is part of the problem down in Austin with the spending going on and accruing this kind of debt for roads and other issues that we can't pay for.
Mr. Craig, a question for Mr. Flynn.
This morning in the news, there was a story coming out of our state attorney general's office, the Child Support Enforcement Division, talking about some of the, I believe they termed it, deadbeat dads, the scofflaws who, for whatever reason, don't pay child support. When a divorce is granted by the courts, in cases that do involve children, custody of the children is a major issue, as is the assessment of child support. The divorce decree also contains a number of other orders that should be equally enforceable through the state attorney general's office, with added emphasis from the federal government that enforcement has been only in the area of child support. However, for the absentee parent, the only recourse when visitation or contact with their children is denied by the other parent is to employ an attorney to seek enforcement of a court order. Would you author or consider supporting legislation that would provide for equal enforcement of all orders in a divorce decree?
First of all, I think that we have an attorney general who is very active in pursuing that collection of those deadbeat dads, as you refer to them. And he's done a very outstanding job. You bet. It continues to grow. One of the biggest problems that we have facing that is we have so many single-parent families. And in many cases, no one knows who the dad is. So it's not just a question of how we're going to go get the money from these people, but it is a question of having to address stronger family values, if you will, be able to do those things that can continue to strengthen the family. Yes, every session I've been there, I have filed legislation, been a co-author, a joint author of legislation that does exactly that, and that is to address strengthening our families and also allowing our attorney general to have those tools that he needs to go after those deadbeat dads.
Mr. Alexander, your response?
I'm for equal enforcement of all orders, but as an attorney, you got to realize that I see what goes on in the courthouse and in the courtroom day in, day out. And the practical side of what goes on, if you have one person that's represented by an attorney and the other person's not, you clearly got an advantage if you have an attorney. How are you going to – I don't know of an equitable system where – I mean, basically the state would provide – the resources to provide an attorney for someone who couldn't afford an attorney in that kind of situation. Now, in a criminal situation, because you've violated the court's order and you failed to pay child support and you could possibly go to jail, you get appointed an attorney. You have a right to appoint an attorney. But on a regular civil matter, where it's establishment of child custody, divorce, whatever it is, it's a civil matter at that point, and you don't have an automatic right to an attorney. And I don't know how you change that law. I wouldn't support doing that because I don't know how you do it equitably.
Nick Bailey, a question for Mr.
There's not a common sense solution to that.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
It's all right. Nick Bailey, a question for Mr. Alexander.
Yes. Would you support comprehensive immigration reform under some circumstances? If so, please specify the exact circumstances and preconditions under which you'd support reform.
Comprehensive immigration legislation?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that's more of a federal level and a federal question, and I'll just be honest with you, I don't know enough about the federal immigration laws to be able to address that. If you're going to become a United States citizen, you have to go through the federal government, and I don't know the answer to that. I don't know enough about immigration laws to answer that.
Mr. Flynn, would you like to tackle that question?
The 10th Amendment of the Constitution talks about states' rights. States have certain rights. You've seen a number of states that have tried to address this issue, and they've been sued by the federal government. We're right in the process of also doing the same thing here in Texas. I'm a member of the Homeland Security Committee and Public Safety. It is a major issue that we're having to face. I also am a member of the Texas Guard. I address it on the front line. It is one of those issues that we need to continue to work on. Texas, we put $400 million into border security. I am not for granting amnesty to anyone. I'm okay with allowing a pathway, but the federal government has also got to assume their responsibility there. But I think here in Texas, we've already seen a reduction in illegals coming over.
We'll take one more round of questioning from the panel. Ms. Matthews, a question for either candidate.
All right. This is a little bit of a look-ahead question. If you were to be elected, this is for Mr. Alexander. Over the last two legislative sessions, the governor has called a special session each year to address a number of topics in 2009 and 2011. How would you characterize the 82nd Texas Legislature's ability to move bills through committee and before both chambers for approval? And what would you envision as the model of the 83rd Texas Legislature?
Well, I can tell you, if elected, I mean, you know, I don't know how I can answer that question without knowing what the issues are going to be for the 83rd legislature. I'm not familiar with what exactly every issue was in the 82nd legislature. I can tell you that if I'm your legislator, that I'm going to work hard to cut our spending and promote education issues, reform of education. I'm going to work hard to support our community and all the three counties in my district. But without knowing what specific issues are going to be coming up in the 83rd legislative session, and whether we'd even have a special session, I don't know how to answer that.
Mr. Flynn, a response?
Yes, I think the primary issues in the last session was, of course, the budget, public education, border security. It's going to be pretty much the same thing in the 83rd session as far as how are we going to address those. Of course, I've always been an advocate of a zero-based budget. That's what we did in 2003. It was very, very effective, and we were able to set the plan for where we are right now. As far as what specific public education, there's no question that the school funding system, it's broken, it's inadequate, and what we have to do is get rid of this system that we have right now. It's unfair. Senator Doolin and I have been working together with the superintendents of this school, of this district, and we've got some great ideas because our kids in House District 2 are just as valuable as any kids in any part of the state, and we're going to address that issue. I've already started working on it, and the testing, the moratorium on testing was probably one of the best steps. Now I'm seeing the TEA is adopting our suggestion. That's $500 million that we can help. Plus, it relieves a lot of stress on the part of students and teachers and parents.
Scott Harvey, a question for Mr. Flynn.
Yes, we've talked a lot about school funding tonight. Also, let's talk about city and county funding and an option that was presented last week. I want to get your opinion on the Texas House and Ways Committee. Last Thursday, heard testimony from conservative activists that included one option to abolish property taxes and instead collect more revenue through sales and business tax to make up the difference. When the idea of how the state collects property taxes comes up in next legislative session, would this be an option you would consider? And if not, what are some of the best directions in supporting and financing schools, cities, and counties?
I served two sessions back. Speaker Craddock appointed me to the property tax task force. I went to 26 cities all over the state of Texas, and I advocated eliminating property tax and going to a consumption tax. It was interesting to me that everybody in the audience, when I would ask for a show of hands who was in favor of that, everyone in the audience was always in favor of it. The problem was that everybody on my panel of task force, they didn't like that idea for various reasons. I think that you're continuing to see, and just this week, the Ways and Means has addressed that again, and it's coming up, and I still think that that's a good way. I would never support it unless we do away with the property tax. Now, we're talking about for school funding. We're not talking about the tax that would be available for cities and counties, because they have difficulty raising money, and we've got mayors and county judges out here that would be the very first to tell you we need more money, and please don't touch that for us. And so that's the way it would be suggested, and I would be very supportive of anything that could reduce the property tax. I mean, it's unconscionable that we have a situation where people have property tax, they've worked all their life, they've paid off their mortgage, and then they have to rent their home from the government the rest of their life. It's immoral. I'm opposed to it, and I will continue to do everything I can to change that system.
Mr. Alexander, your view of that question?
We're going down a slippery slope towards a state income tax, in my opinion, if we're not real careful. If we're going to go to a business tax and sales tax and get rid of the real property taxes, I'd have to be absolutely convinced that we were not leading to a state income tax. People move to the state of Texas because we don't have a state income tax. Once we have a state income tax, it's going to go up and up and up. I think it's a slippery slope that we've got to avoid.
Mr. Craig, a question for Mr. Alexander.
Mr. Alexander, each year our county officials and city officials, too, face something that they refer to as unfunded mandates coming from state government, where they're instructed to implement whatever program. They've got the instructions how to do it, how it must be handled, but there's no funding. Do you see any relief coming from Austin as far as helping out with the mandates from the government to the local entities?
Well, that's one of the big problems, and I've talked to the county judge in Hunt County oftentimes about that. You know, one of the things that your state representative has got to be willing to do and he's got to engage in, he's got to be proactive protecting his counties and his city officials from those unfunded mandates. And I would certainly be willing to do that and continue to do that. I don't know of any specific things coming up in this session that deal with unfunded mandates, but you'd have my full support to stop the unfunded mandates. Same thing affects schools. They're ordered these unfunded mandates. They can't afford them, and it affects our rural school systems. So before an unfunded mandate is ordered, it needs to be vetted through the county and the city to talk about what the issues are, how it's going to be paid for, whether it's really beneficial, whether it needs to be imposed on this particular county or city or school system in particular before it's done.
Mr. Flynn, your one-minute response.
I think that what we're looking at is it's that big ball that rolls out of the federal government who mandates issues onto the state. The state then mandates issues onto the county. The county issues those onto the cities. It's one of those things that has to be stopped. It's something that's addressed on a regular basis. It's something that I've been a champion on. In fact, I've been very pleased that the Empower Texas, the Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, have awarded me their A-plus award because of my work on just that issue. Texas Association of Business has given me the free enterprise champion, a free enterprise system because of my work on that issue. And I think that every legislative issue that is passed should address that issue of whether or not it is creating an unfunded mandate on the next layer of government. It has to start with the federal government, too.
Our last question, Nick Bailey, a question for either candidate.
Mr. Alexander, how will you balance your principles, the principles of your faith, and your obligation to defend the Constitution, particularly if the two come into conflict?
Well, I'm a Christian first and foremost, and of course, as a state official and public official, you've got to take into mind all of your constituents. But, as a Republican and as a Christian conservative, those are going to be my first values and my first focuses. That's what directs me every day. That's what will guide me through making decisions one way or another as I'm your state representative.
Mr. Flynn, your response to that question?
When I was first elected, I promised the constituents of this district that all of my votes would always be based on moral conviction and faith in God and faith in the people of Texas. I believe that I have kept that promise. I think that the fact that the Texas Right to Life has endorsed me, the Texas Association of Business endorses me, the Texas Realtors, the Texans for Lawsuit Reform, the NRA have all endorsed me, along with most of the conservative leaders in the state of Texas. This election is going to be one of the most important elections in our lives. And I believe this district deserves an experienced, consistent, and conservative as your state representative. And I will continue to fight for everyone here. I'll vote the way that they expect me to vote. And I will uphold those jobs, those life, faith, family, and freedom.
Gentlemen, that ends the question and answer part of tonight. Closing statements. You both have 2 minutes. Mr. Alexander, you are first.
I wanted to first thank the Texas A&M University of Commerce Colony of Phi Iota, did I say that right, Alpha Fraternity, and Hunt County African American Leadership Conference, and in particular Dr. Lavelle Hendricks for their help in setting this up today. Look, I am not a career politician. I am someone who grew up, have got deep roots in this county and the surrounding counties. I have been involved in my community for the past 20 years in every way possible because I came back to Greenville and Hunt County and Raines County and Hopkins County to be a part of the to be a part of my community to raise my family. This race is not about how much I know about being a legislator. This election is about the past 10 years that Mr. Flynn has been our legislator. It's about his record as our legislator. As I have said often several times tonight, it is extremely important to me when you start talking about our state spending and what we have money for, whether it's education, whether it's for roads, or for whatever it is, to understand that in the past 10 years, Mr. Flynn has been in office again, our state spending has increased $60 billion. And it's also important to understand the debt that we are in, which I've already talked about. But you never hear Mr. Flynn talk about that. Mr. Flynn is borrowing and spending our future. He does not, his voting record shows that he does not value our property rights. He voted in favor of the Texas Trans Corridor, the largest government land grab in our state history. Once more, he voted against a measure that proposed the removal of the confidentiality of toll roads contracts so we could view those contracts. In 2011, Mr. Flynn voted against a measure that would allow Texas to take back control of managing our environment from the federal government. It passed anyway, but he voted against it. Talk about 10th Amendment rights. He voted against an amendment by Ralph Sheffield that would have strengthened our property rights. He doesn't value our property rights because he doesn't own any real estate property. Dan Flynn voted against an amendment that would make the budget more open and transparent to us in the public. Mr. Flynn voted to levy a granny tax on nursing home residents, which created a new bed tax on nursing homes, increasing the cost of our most vulnerable, infirmed, and elderly citizens. And you ask, why does Mr. Flynn vote on these kinds of things? He's a career politician. He has accumulated $1.1 million in campaign contributions in his 10 years. He's 86% of that money has come from out of district. 14% of that is from inside his district. In this election, Mr. Flynn is another prime example. Has raised $83,000 from January through the reporting date in April. Only $9,600 of that money came from inside this district. All the rest of it came from lobbyists and special interests. Mr. Flynn is bought and paid for, and you deserve better. You deserve someone who has a vested interest in your community representing you, someone who has a business in your community, who has deep roots in your community, who has been active in your community for 20 years or better, has a family in your community.
Thank you very much, Mr. Alexander. Mr. Flynn, your two-minute closing remarks.
Dr. Hendricks, thank you very much for arranging this. Appreciate it greatly. And all of the panelists, the questions, I greatly appreciate that. You know, folks can always have an opinion, but they don't get to have their own facts. The facts are what they are. And I'm very happy to stand beside my record in the Texas legislature. My commitment has always been to work every day, to hold the government accountable. I believe that in limited government, individual freedom, free enterprise, protecting the unborn, and the traditional family values. I am happy to have my legislative career reviewed. I've served 5 terms in the Texas House. It's the only elected position I've ever held. I was appointed as a county judge for a short time, but I wasn't elected. And what the future is for Texas, I think we're a great roadmap for all of the states throughout the nation. When I look at teachers and the teacher retirements and I talk to them, I tell every one of them, you know what? You're going to get your retirement check, not an IOU like California gives you. I would tell everyone that the actuarial soundness that we have maintained of all of our retirement systems is solid and sound, and mostly because of the tough decisions that we made in 2003 to set Texas on this roadmap to where we are. We are the envy of 49 states. I serve on national committees, and when I walk in the room, they all want to know, how in the world did you do it in Texas? The one question that I do want to address, and that is, do you really want an unproven, an unknown, an undecided, perhaps Republican who's never done anything to build a party? As far as the support that I've received, I can look out in this audience and count more than 9 people that have supported me over the last few years. I am very proud of all the records that I have done. I am very proud to serve in the Texas legislature, and I will look forward and I would appreciate all your votes and support to continue that service, and may God bless each one of you. Thank you very much.
That ends our rather lively debate this evening. Hopefully what the candidates had to say will be enlightening, and will give you some information to make a choice when you go to the polls in the primary election. That ends our event tonight. Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone.